Moose in Maine. Let's face it, moose have charisma. They're massive. Males can weigh as much as 1,500 pounds, and their antlers can span 6 feet. And though it doesn't seem possible because they are so ungainly looking, they can run really quickly, as fast as 35 miles an hour. Yet most of the time, they seem placid, wading in shallow water, munching on greenery. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Moose are a symbol of Maine. There are more here than in any other state but Alaska. However, we've lost thousands in the past few years because of ticks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with the state's leading moose biologist about the status of Maine's moose population. What do you want to know about moose? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It may be one of the most recognizable symbols in Maine, not the lighthouse, the moose, with its huge antlers and imposing size. Today, we'll learn more about this unique animal and how its population is doing in our state. Joining me in the studio is Lee Cantor. He is Maine's state moose biologist with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you ever seen a moose up close? Do you have questions about how they're doing? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And a note that today's program is part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics that reflect what is iconic in Maine. Lee, welcome to Maine Calling. You were recently honored with a big award for your work as state moose biologist. I want to say congratulations. How did you become so interested in moose?
Oh, boy. That's a long story. That's too long for today.
We have a pretty long show.
Yeah. No, I grew up in New Hampshire and always loved wildlife since I was a little kid, of course. And I have some pretty iconic moments back in the, really in the 80s when moose were part of a resurgence in New England. I spent a lot of time up in the White Mountains, especially during my college years. Had lots of moose run-ins back then. And it's just really good fortune to be able to sit here today doing what I do. I mean, I always feel very lucky to have this position and to work on such an iconic species. So,
you said a few moose run-ins. I'm going to say most, not all, if they get to see a moose at all, it's a thrill. It's from a distance. Tell me about something that was up close.
Oh, boy. Well, I can actually remember a specific time on Sandwich Mountain in New Hampshire where we had a whole pack of folks on a hike, including dogs. And I was coming down the mountain just ahead of everybody. I think I had my dog right with me. And just surprisingly, up high on that mountain, there was a pretty good-sized bull standing right there in the trail. And my dog was basically nose-to-nose with the bull. And it was one of those things that happens very, very quickly. The moose is in the trail. I reach down, grab my dog, and she didn't bark or anything. The moose moved off down and then came back down the trail, you know, 40 yards down and just moved off. No big deal. But, you know, quite an amazing moment because it was very up close and things happened quickly. But fortunately, my dog was a great dog, mellow dog, listened pretty well and didn't budge. So.
Well, let me ask you this. I was actually going to ask you this question a little bit later in the hour, but since you brought up this story, what is the proper thing to do if one runs into a moose? I have read that moose run 35 miles an hour, so you're not going to outrun a moose, right?
Yeah, no. You know, it depends upon the time of year, right? I mean, moose are like people. Every moose probably has its own bubble, and moose give you signs that they're not happy, and those signs can really change in a split second. So, you know, my advice, it doesn't matter whether it's a squirrel or a moose. When you're talking about wildlife, wildlife thrive on having distance between people and them. It's never a good idea to get close up to any animal. And with a moose in particular, you know, we have people on snowmobiles in the wintertime who are on trails that are obviously well packed. And moose like to be on those packed trails because it's a path of least resistance. And, you know, unfortunately for the people on sleds, on snowmobiles, they're the ones that have to give way, and you have to be patient. Same thing on a roadway. You know, if a moose is standing there on the side of the road, it needs space, it needs time to move off. And, you know, a moose will raise its hackles, you know, on the back. It can start making head movements and just little twitches with its ears. It can roll back its eyes and show you the whites of its eyes, which is never a good sign. But again, it goes back to distance. And, you know, in this day and age, you know, that's pretty important to remember.
So you're hiking, snowmobiling, cross country. Let's say you're on foot, hiking, cross country skiing, come around a corner, a moose is right there. Slowly back up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my wife and my oldest were on a trip to Baxter this spring, and it was ironic because my wife, she'll kill me now for saying this. She's also a wildlife
biologist. Oh, good. Do tell.
She's a wildlife biologist, and they were in one of the ponds there, and there was a young, I think it was a bull, that was just popped out of the woods right near them. And her and the rest of the kids, there was a whole gang of them, were really concerned about the proximity with the moose. And in my small mind, I was wondering, well, what's the concern here? I mean, they were on a little decking that I think goes out into the pond a little bit, but, you know, they weren't moving towards the moose. The moose was feeding and doing its thing slowly. And really all you can do in that circumstance is, yes, start to walk backwards and slowly get out of there. And, you know, it's a case-by-case basis, but giving distance is important.
Okay, so let's talk about the status of the moose population. You know, I think anybody who's been reading the news in Maine the last few years knows that there have been moose dead calves found with tens of thousands of ticks on them that have died of anemia. We've seen a decline in the moose population because of ticks. How today, in 2019, would you characterize the health of the moose population in Maine?
Well, there's a lot of complications to this question that you asked, because health is, on one hand, it's about the individual animal, and on the other hand, it's about the population as a whole. And so you can say that across the state, the moose population is healthy, but that doesn't mean that there aren't individuals in areas where, you know, animals are not healthy. And one of the things that we talk about when we talk about health with our population of moose is we talk about how well these animals reproduce every year, okay? And the mark of a healthy population of things like moose are a population where they breed almost, well, they breed every year and have calves maybe every year. They have higher to moderate twinning rates. They breed at a younger age. There's all these things that we can measure that have really declined since the 1980s when moose were coming back on our landscape. And so when somebody says health, you and I may think of things differently. There's a unhealthy animal that's sick, that has something wrong with it, like a parasite that attacks the central nervous system, like brainworm or meningeal worm. That's a sick individual. As a population, we're looking at reproduction over time and how that has changed. And as it declines, usually that has to do with how many animals, in this case moose, are in an area and the amount of resources available to it. So in a classic case, it would be how many moose there are relative to the amount of food that's out there. The story that's unfolding for us in Maine is that we're seeing that it's not an issue of how much food and how many moose we have. It's an issue that we've had so many moose as we climbed through the 1990s into the early 2000s, that winter tick was coming right behind it. And then what we did not understand at that same time is that with climate moderating, it was creating an environment, a physical environment that was really good for winter ticks. And those winter tick populations were likely increasing and really having an impact on animals. And that in turn is starting, especially in the last 10 years, having a real impact on our smallest animals, which are our calves entering their first winter.
So if we were looking at a graph of the moose population over the years, we'd see 100 years ago a much lower number, climbing through the 80s, 90s, maybe peaking 2010 or so, and then going down?
Well, 100 years ago, you know, when we talk about from the 1800s going into the 1900s, we'd see a moose population in decline, driven by changes in habitat by Mainers, by how we use the landscape, and especially how we cut the forest. And by the 1930s, the Maine moose hunt had stopped because of the concerns over the moose on the landscape. And then, as you know, moose started to come back into the 70s when we had the big spruce budworm epidemic where, you know, trees were coming down in the North Woods. There was lots of salvage operation. At the same time, we were coming into a stage where forestry was becoming much more mechanized. The North Woods was becoming much more roaded, a lot more roads up there, a lot more access. And so all these things were happening at the same time, and it was creating a great environment where there were tons of food for moose in the 80s and 90s. And so that moose population really took off, probably to a level that was unprecedented. In fact, it's probably pretty clear by the late 90s we had more moose on the landscape in Maine than perhaps ever historically. Yep.
Okay. I'm going to bring someone else into the conversation, someone you know. On the line with us now, Peter Pekins. He is professor of wildlife ecology at the University of New Hampshire. Thanks for calling in, Pete.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. You're speaking with the expert, though, in Maine, so I'll add in what I can.
Well, tell us how New Hampshire and Maine are collaborating on research with winter ticks and moose.
Yeah, you know, just to go back, about 15 years, we had been running really the first major project in New England, when we had radio-collared 100 animals in New Hampshire back in 2002. And, 1 year we did have this high calf mortality due to winter ticks, and nothing else happened the other 3 years. So we thought it was like the historical records, and nobody was concerned. You know, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, everybody had a nice, healthy moose population as far as we knew. New Hampshire particularly, because we're much smaller than Maine, you know, we have a little better handle on numbers of animals. It's a lot easier for us to count them. And that's not discounting now that Lee has put together aerial surveys in Maine. Maine is now leading the way in this. But back then, it was, you know, we had a pretty good idea when our population was declining. And suspicion was driven by, I think it was 2011, I was in a conversation with Lee about snowmobilers reporting a lot of dead calves and dead moose on snowmobile trails. It was a real tough winter. And anecdotally, we were pretty sure this was winter tick coming back. And I think in retrospect, it never left. It's just the conditions were starting to play in the tick's favor. So the states got together. It really is unprecedented, the cooperation of Maine and New Hampshire, to put together the largest moose research project in North America. And that started, I think, 2014 was the first capture. And, of course, Maine is still ongoing. Ours is wrapping up just due to financial reasons. And but it's been an unprecedented amount of research, data, understanding of this relationship between moose and winter ticks, and relatedly the impact of climate change on both. And it's a sad story, but people always ask me, we're going to lose our moose, and my answer is absolutely not. A host-parasite relationship will eventually stabilize, and I think that's the next part of the research that Maine's going to lead the way in, and is trying to see if we can figure out what that balance is out there.
Well, before I let you go, this was going to be my follow-up question for you. You mentioned it. Can we measure how much climate change is affecting this whole equation of the ticks attacking, if you will, the moose?
Yeah, it has to do with the this is our hypothesis here, but we have lots of data to support it, and we're working on predictive models to help managers like Lee take a couple measurements in the fall and be able to predict, you know, that calf mortality next spring. And it really just boils down to that winter is starting later and later. And so what this means is that the larval tick, which attaches to moose in the fall, you know, the irony is right now moose are kind of tick-free. And this,
when you say right now, beginning of August?
Well, from really kind of mid-June through through August.
Okay.
Pretty much tick-free. And then what happens is all the eggs that were laid last spring by the ticks are developed into larvae. These larvae get up in the vegetation. Moose walks by, and they ticks latch on to moose. And of course, with this tick, it's, you know, when we, most of us have had deer ticks on us or dog ticks, and there's one tick. And in this case, that this particular tick attaches in groups of tens and hundreds. So this is how you can get these tick loads on a moose of tens of thousands. And we have actually measured, the highest we've measured is 95,000.
95,000 ticks on one moose?
Ticks on one calf.
Oh, gosh.
Now you're never, you know, again, the average is about 50,000 in these really bad years. And so we can model all that out. We know that'll kill a calf. There's no calf that can survive that. But why those loads are so high, it really comes down to how long can that larval tick be active. So as climate change lengthens autumn, it just allows whatever ticks are out there more time to find a host. And so, you know, if you think about it, if these are active normally to the first week in November, so they might have 8 weeks total. You know, from September 1 to early November. If you then run that to December, it's maybe 3 weeks longer. It doesn't sound like a lot, but proportionally, it's immense. And that's what we're looking at now is the attachment rate or the acquisition of ticks kind of steady state as fall weather holds, and it looks like that's true. So this starts to explain how all of a sudden you go from 25,000 ticks, which might kill a few calves, to 45,000 ticks, which are going to kill probably over 50% of calves.
Mm.
And so that's the climate change angle. And it doesn't matter what happens in winter because I guess Lee will probably talk about this. Last winter was very severe. That complicates it. But, you know, once the ticks are on the moose, the ticks don't care because they're, you know, not nestled into a warm body. So, you know, it's really about fall, summer and fall weather are probably more important.
Well, Peter, thanks so much for calling in. Peter Pekins, a professor of wildlife ecology at the University of New Hampshire. I'm going to let you follow up on this, Lee. So what you're going to be studying next is where the balance is, it sounds like. It sounds like the more moose we have, the more ticks we have. And so the more ticks, the more moose die.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're trying to understand that. We're entering our seventh year of the study in our Western unit and 5 years up north. And combined with all the information from New Hampshire, the next step too, and Pete and his students are working on that, is understanding more about winter tick ecology and ticks in the fall and how moose acquire them and whether there's habitat nuances and things like that. But we're also trying to figure out, you know, management wise, what are we going to do? People always ask us, well, what are you going to do?
Right.
And you know, it's a complicated answer because number one, there is no straight answer for that. People ask us about, well, why don't we use paintball guns? And why don't we dart the moose with paintball guns and use pesticide? Why don't we put pesticide on collars? Why don't, you know, all these things that, you know, we take those questions very, very seriously because, I mean, it's not a pleasant thing being at ground zero for this, you know, and I live this all the time. This is my job. And we want to see moose live. We don't want to see calves over winter die at the rate they've been doing in the last 5 out of 6 years. But the winter tick moose dynamic and bad years where winter ticks really attack animals has happened for decades. They've happened in different jurisdictions in Canadian provinces, in the Upper Peninsula, in Michigan. But usually when they've happened, it's been one winter. And there's a bad winter where the outcome in the spring is a lot of calves are dead. What's unprecedented, and Pete was kind of talking about here, is that we've had a string of it year after year after year, and there is no known solution. You know, Dr. Bill Samuel, who's kind of the grandfather, or I shouldn't say that, maybe that's not the way of putting it, but he's done tremendous research on this relationship between moose and winter ticks, as well as Ed Addison in Ontario. And so they've researched this, they've looked at this, and to try to eliminate something like a winter tick across this massive landscape is a huge challenge. Mm. You know, I mean, how do you do that?
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about moose in Maine. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Hi, this is Mark Simpson, News Director here at Maine Public, and this is our first day of our Grow Together Summer Membership Campaign. We're asking you to call in support of 1-800-866-1475 in support of great local journalism here in depth. We're going for a deep dive, if you will, about the moose here in the state of Maine. Of course, an iconic animal, learning a lot about the ecology challenges that moose are facing right now. And I think it's probably safe to say there's not a lot of other media that are doing a deep dive on this at this moment, understanding this big iconic animal we have here. If you enjoy local conversation, local journalism, interesting variety of topics from national to international to local to regional to biological, you can find it all here at Maine Public. 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. Delighted to be joined this hour by my colleague, Ms. Jennifer Mitchell.
Hi, always excellent. And you know, Maine Calling, it's sort of that sort of a diverse sort of meeting house, you know, where you talk about all kinds of things. I mean, there are some other interesting topics coming up and soon. There's agriculture. I think there's like historic preservation. And where else have we been this month? I mean, we've come together to discuss so many things here at Maine Public.
It's all possible.
It's all possible. 800-866-1475. It is only possible because folks like you have called and made that pledge of support for many decades in the past. We're actually the beneficiaries of other people's philanthropy many years ago. So we have to keep that ball rolling, though.
That's right. And the way we keep it rolling here in day one of our funder is by calling 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. That works as well. The website is ready to go. It's standing by for you. I want to give a thanks to Market Street Eats, Market Street in Portland. Thank you so much. You've donated lunch for our volunteers, and we do appreciate it. I have seen sandwiches consumed by many grateful volunteers.
Keeping,
so thank you so much.
Keeping them fueled. And
food is the fuel to keep pledge drives going.
That's right. And it also is a reminder that there are so many people behind the scenes that make public radio happen. And you know what? You're an important one of them. Whether you're you tune in for specific programs, maybe you tune in for that top of the hour news, maybe you never miss a Maine Calling because you want to be part of that discussion, that person at the table.
Yes.
We're here for you only because folks like you have supported at whatever level you can.
That's right. It could be the $5 a month level, the $10 a month level. Maybe you can give at the $20 a month level, become an evergreen member. All of that would be great. We want you to find the amount that fits your wallet, your budget, and give as generously as you can. You can do that by calling 1-800-866-1475. Give at mainepublic.org. You know, one of the great things we have here at Maine Public is our own show, Maine Calling, on right now. The team there does great research into the topics they're talking about and sustains an excellent, engaging conversation, gives you a chance, the listener, to call in and talk, ask your questions, find out more. And this is a great service that we are able to provide you. One of the things that makes Maine Public strong, and we're asking you to continue that momentum by helping us here during our membership campaign. 1-800-866-1475, mainepublic.org works as well.
That's right, 1-800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. You're an important voice. You're an important person at the table. It's why we have programs like Maine Calling, so we can talk a little bit about topics that are important to the state. And it didn't used to be 5 days a week, but now it is because you wanted it, and your support is so crucial to making it happen. 800-866-1475 and mainepublic.org to support. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're learning all about moose. Our guest, state moose biologist Lee Cantor. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to audience questions, though, Lee, I want to ask you, and I understand this sounds like it's not a controversial question, but it is. How many moose are there in Maine?
That's a controversial question. Now, we get that all the time. And the reality is that almost, you know, I don't know if it's 10 years, it's already gone by. We started an aerial survey program, which was, you know, we've done aerial survey work back in the day trying to figure out moose populations. In fact, the state, you can go back to the 60s where they were trying to figure out, that was a low point of moose, trying to figure out how many moose are there and, you know, figure out how to count them or however. And so there's been all kinds of attempts. Of course, we have 16,000 square miles of commercial forest lands in the state of Maine, which is prime moose habitat. So how do you cover 16,000 square miles? Well, we have to do, you know, what's called sampling, which is we got to take it one little piece at a time and try to get estimates on that. And, you know, in a single year, we cannot cover all of that, even the way we sample. So we pick some of our game units. Now, we have 29 game management units across the state. We have 21 where there's moose hunting. But the core range of moose, what I call the core range, which drives how many moose are in the state, covers about 12 management districts. And we're talking about all the area from Rangeley, Maine, surrounding Moosehead Lake to the north, all the way up to the Quebec and New Brunswick border, coming all the way around to the east and going down towards Danforth and our commercial forest lands. And so every year we got to pick at that and go out and do our flights. And we do that via helicopter with the Maine Forest Service, and we've had a fantastic partnership with them for since the beginning. We couldn't do anything without them. And we do two different types of surveys. One is where we go into a management unit, you know, let's say 1,000 to 2,000 square miles, and we fly a 100 square mile block in straight lines called transects. And we have two observers in the helicopter on one side of the helicopter that can't hear or talk to each other that are counting moose as we pass them. We fly 200 feet above ground. That's brushing the treetops. And we're looking out only 200 feet. That's it, 200 feet we're looking at. And as we drive that transect, fly that transect 25 miles, we do that seven times, we're counting moose and radioing that to a third guy who's the biologist behind the pilot. And this is a basic mark recapture flight for those statistician-minded people out there. and we get an estimate of what that block looks like, and then we extrapolate that to the larger management district. We also do a separate flight, which is what we call a sex and age flight. We go out there and we count the number of bulls, cows, and calves in a unit. And so then we fly around in circles and low level and up high and around the hills and figure out how many bulls, cows, and calves. So that gives us a really nice picture of what each of the units looks like, how many and what flavor, bull, cow, or calf.
And so I noticed that you haven't answered the question, so let me put it this way. What is the best estimate at this point, based on the work that you've done, on about how many moose there are in Maine?
Well, we model this over time. I would probably look at between 40 and 60. So I give it a wide margin of error because I literally don't look at that number every year because I'm trying to pick apart and do these aerial surveys. And then basically after about 5 years, when we've ran through them all, we can sit there and say, okay, based on some pretty good data, this is what things look like.
So we're thinking tens of thousands of moose.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Around 60,000 is the number I read this morning. Is that about?
Sure, that sounds good.
We have an email from John. Do moose swim regularly? When I was a boy, I was fishing with my grandfather on Lake Azizcohos, and we Azizcohos. Are you pronouncing that? Yeah. And we were surprised to see a bull swimming across the lake.
Absolutely. Moose swim a lot, and they're excellent swimmers. In fact, this is not saying this to brag, but as part of our research, we actually catch moose in the water. Lots of people ask, well, why do you catch them in the water? And I like to say, because we can. You know, it's a nice way for us to catch some moose in our local area in western Maine. And so I've spent a lot of hours over the last 6 years on the water watching whether it's a bull or a cow with a calf. You know, an aquatic environment, especially the edges, are really great for moose. The semi-aquatic and aquatic vegetation, really nutritious for moose. Lots of minerals, including sodium, that moose love. Great way to take a bath and cool off. But they're going to cross these areas like it's nothing to get to the other side because there's other places on the other side where there's vegetation as well. Moose can dive. Phenomenal.
Really?
Yes, they can. Well, it always cracks me up. I was up in Moosehead, Greenville the other day, giving a talk and picking on some folk in New Jersey. We love folks from New Jersey. And I always picture, can you imagine some folks coming up from there, they go swimming in a pond, and they go dive down, and all of a sudden they meet, you know, face to snout with a bull moose that had just dove down and they hadn't seen it. So, they spend a lot of time in that environment. They do a lot of swimming because they're great swimmers. Yeah.
So if they dive down, are they looking for something to eat?
Vegetation, yep. Oh, yeah.
So they dive down and munch and come back up?
Yeah, right, yep. And so we've watched moose where if you were paddling along in a canoe, you'd never know there was a moose there because all it looks like is a hump, like a rock, sticking out of the water. I've seen that hump go back and forth in the water where the moose is just feeding below the surface, and then all of a sudden, bam, the head pops up, and the water's straining off of the moose, and it's just an amazing sight.
We're going to go to Brunswick. Frederick calling from Brunswick. Hi, Frederick. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I've been enjoying your program, and I wonder if you have an idea. Is there sufficient interest in, the research into climate change to provide adequate funding for, would it be Natural Resources Department? And do you have an idea of what that adequate funding would mean? How much of an increase are we looking at, would you say?
Well, that's a very nice and nice question, generous question. That's not my side of things. Our department, which is Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, spends a lot of time, dealing with climate change and talking about it and on various committees, et cetera, because we manage everything from moose to freshwater mussels. So every animal, insects, that lives in the state of Maine, every native animal is something that we're looking at from both a conservation perspective as well as other things. And so, funding is always a key thing. And, one of the things is that we've always been supported very strongly by hunters and anglers. But the reality of the Maine Department of Fish and Wildlife is that, we're there to conserve all wildlife species across the state and to maintain that through time. And we could really use the support of all people in Maine and everybody who cares about wildlife.
A Facebook comment from Jimmy. It's interesting when we hear about the threats to survival for moose in Maine. We hear about ticks and habitat loss and climate change, but never do we hear about human depredations. It is a contributing factor. Moose numbers have plummeted, and we should examine all the contributing factors. I'm guessing here, because I can't ask Jimmy, that he's talking about hunting. And sure. Why don't I talk to you, Lee? How does the state of Maine determine how many hunting permits to release for Maine?
Sure. Well, there's lots to this question, because I think people need to understand, number one, that when we talk about, and there's a lot of things going on here, but hunting and hunting mortality, the number of animals that are killed every year, make a negligible, and I know this is hard to understand, a negligible difference in that population decline or increase over time, okay? So our permit levels in the state of Maine since 1980, when the hunt first started, have had just about no impact on whether that population increases or decreases. You know what has impact on Maine's moose population today and why there's less moose than 10 years ago? It's winter tick, because what winter tick does is it removes young moose trying to make it to their first year, and it has an effect on adult cows. It doesn't kill the adult cow, but it can have a real physiological drain on that cow so that when she gives birth to a calf in May, that calf is not going to make it. And then the other thing, which we talked about earlier with our moose numbers, our densities, is we were talking about in a typical situation where you see low productivity and issues with how many moose are produced every year, that's usually associated with food. In our case, it's being associated and caused by winter tick, which in turn is something that's, part of this whole threat of climate change. So it's very complicated. And then the counterintuitive part about this with hunting is that we actually, no matter how many moose are out there, and this was the controversy we were joking about, but it doesn't matter how many moose are out there. When you have declining productivity, you need to have less moose because of the impact of winter tick. So winter tick has piggybacked on increases in moose into the 90s and 2000s. And then as the moose have started to decrease because of the loss of young and their ability to survive over time in some areas, winter tick is there causing that and depressing that population. So we're trying to figure out, how are we going to fix that? And the experts in the field believe that at some lower density of moose, you're going to basically starve out the winter tick, okay? And if you can break that winter tick cycle, then moose are going to be able to reproduce better and at a younger age produce more twins and start to crawl out of that hole that they're put in because of this impact of winter tick.
So quickly, is there some discussion of saying, okay, these areas of Maine seem to have a high population of winter ticks, so we're going to give more moose permits in those areas?
Well, that's really what we talk about now when we talk about health. And what we're trying to do is we've been looking at designing an experimental unit where we take half of a game management unit and we increase the permits in there to try to purposely decrease the number of moose there to see if we can break that cycle. Now, that'd be long term, more than 5 years to do that and to measure those effects and compare that to another area where we're not taking that same management action. And this is very counterintuitive to people as well, and it brings up all kinds of issues about hunting and all that. But as I said, based on this question that we posed, is that, you know, the reality of moose hunting in Maine today is that it has minimal effect and that it's a very positive thing for many different reasons.
We're going to take another quick break. We're talking about moose in Maine. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
And, of course, you're listening to Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call to support the kind of thoughtful discourse that you hear each and every day on Maine Public Radio. We're talking about moose and
in-depth
the issues.
On the moose.
Absolutely. The winter tick, we know that's been a big problem. And, you know, they're the kinds of stories that we follow throughout the year here on Maine Public Radio through the news department. But here on Maine Calling, you know, it's so nice to have this big meaty chunk set aside where you can really kind of dive deep into an issue. I'm Jennifer Mitchell, one of the voices you hear on Maine Public Radio, here with Mark Simpson, our news director who knows a thing or two about coverage of in-depth coverage.
Yes. You know, Jen, one of the cool things that Maine Calling is doing is they've got an editorial agenda, areas of focus that they're targeting throughout the year. One of them is kind of iconic Maine things, and among those is the moose. So that's part of the reason. Part of the reason that we're focused on this particular show topic today. But it's a great trusted space and place for interesting conversations, engaging thoughts, the back and forth, and a chance for the public to interact as well, to get inside the journalism that we do here at Maine Public and that we hope you appreciate as a resource. The way to do that, call 1-800-866-1475. You can go to mainepublic.org as well. This is the first day of our Grow Together Summer Membership campaign, trying to raise $250,000. You know, it could be, Jen, that we raise all that money in one day. The drive could be over today if we were able to hit that mark. So far, we've raised just shy of $75,000, so we would need a ramp up here in the middle of the day to really send it hurtling home for all things considered in the afternoon.
That's right. I think it's possible, though, because we know that a lot of listeners really tune in for the in-depth thought-provoking journalism that you're going to find here on Maine Public Radio. It's one of the reasons why we kind of split the network so that there's more radio real estate on both sides, because folks want to tune in and really not just learn about the news of the day, whatever's above the fold, but also really kind of get down inside these topics. Like, I'm learning so much even just today. I did not know that moose could dive. I didn't know that. I mean, I know they like to lurk. Yes, exactly. It makes me wonder if they're going to evolve into like an aquatic creature in
moose,
the future.
The next phase.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out all about that, so maybe Lee Kantar can tell us if that's very likely to happen or not. Well, you know, you're going to hear, you never know where you're going to go on Maine Public Radio. It takes us all over the world, from Cranberry Isles to Easter Island. I mean, we've been all over the planet, and that's one of the great things about Maine Public Radio. I learned so much about the globe, and then, of course, on Maine Calling, more about my own state.
That's right. So many interesting topics. We hope that these conversations are important to you as well, and you'll call in support of Maine Calling right now, 800-866-1475. That's the number to call. MainePublic.org works as well. And if you become a member at the $10 a month level or $120 gift right up front, you can get one of the new Maine Public t-shirts that we have. They're both men's and women's cuts there, and they look great. Great material. Got our new new logo on, very snazzy. It's part of the main public line that we have going as well. There's also what we're calling the main public thinking cap. It's a ball cap, but it's a sturdy ball cap. I'd say it's a four-season cap. You know, you can it's
keep you warm,
it's
keep
sturdy
you cool.
enough. You can do it all with this cap, and that can be yours as well. You can see it all online at mainpublic.org if you click donate button, or you can find out more by calling 800-866-1475 and giving as generously as you can.
Mark Primer has done that and, in fact, called from Paris, France. He's Mainer, but he says he listens while having his morning coffee. Harvests in the middle of the night in Maine, which allows him to listen to wonderful classical music programming, of course, because we have our classical
That's
network
right.
as well. And it's a great way to start his day. Thank you so much. And if Mark Primer can call from Paris, France, I'm pretty sure that the rest of us can call from somewhere in the state.
207, make it happen.
800-866-1475. That's 1-800-866-1475. And online at mainpublic.org. Also, Nolan Thompson from South Portland has called in.
You know, I understand that moose do enjoy classical music.
You know, maybe Lee can tell us more about that in this next segment.
That's right.
It's the rumor anyway.
What does it do for them? 800-866-1475. What does Maine Public and what does local journalism here do for you? You can give at mainpublic.org. We're going to get ready to go back to the program, but you can still go online and you can give right at the website. The number 800-866-1475, that's the number to call and help us make this summer drive a success.
Thank you so much for all that you do here on Maine Public Radio. If you've not taken the time or found the time to make that call
Find
and become
now.
A member, now is the time to do that. 1-800-866-1475. It's calls like yours, one at a time, coming in together that keeps this show on the air. 1-800-866-1475 and mainpublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about Maine's moose with state moose biologist Lee Cantor. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Lee, we've all seen the videos of moose in unlikely places, whether it's surfing in York yeah. County beaches or going down a street in Lewiston, which makes me wonder, are there moose living year-round in every corner of Maine, or are they wandering? Are they wandering hundreds of miles from home? Hold on just a sec. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's probably a mix of both. You know, to date in our study, we were closing in on close to 500 animals that we've caught and put GPS collars on to track them over time. And I would say a very small percentage of those animals, usually two-year-olds, have wanderlust. And we had one moose that was captured up near Fish River Lake up in the county. And from about June till maybe sometime in August, she traveled about 100 miles. She went down towards Millinocket, Pemadumcook Lake, stayed on the North Shore, went all the way over to the Appalachian Trail, crossed over, went back east over the Appalachian Trail, went back west to the foot of Moosehead Lake, and then wound up going all the way back home to Fish River Lake. So young moose have a tendency, whether yearlings or two-year-olds, to wander.
That's interesting. That's sort of the age bracket when they decide to go explore the world.
Well, it's typical that moose, you know, a moose mom, a cow moose, has a calf in May, and she will drive off her calf from the previous year if that's the situation. So oftentimes when we get calls from the public where there's a moose doing something crazy, usually it's a young moose that's trying to figure out, you know, its role in life at that age. And now that it was cast off and away from mom during the summertime, it can get into trouble.
All right. Well, Debbie from Harrison, go ahead. What's your question for Lee Cantor?
Hi. I have a question about the ticks. I was wondering if there was any research being done into using vitamin B1 to keep ticks off of the moose. I have miniature donkeys. I have been experimenting with B1 for quite a few years now. And in the past 2 years, and I have a lot of ticks on the property, and I've had probably two ticks in the last 2 years on the donkey.
So B1 vitamins have worked for your donkeys. Go ahead, Lee.
I don't know about B1 specifically. There's a lot to your question here because we're dealing with another, a different tick, which is the winter tick, one-year life cycle that stays on one host versus deer ticks and dog ticks, which have three different hosts. And the winter tick gets on moose in the fall. We're working, Pete Pekins, who is on the phone there, we're working with an expert on ticks in Ohio which is amazing stuff, looking at and trying to look at ways to deter the winter tick itself. The other thing when we talk about application to a wild moose is that it's completely different than any kind of domesticated animals. And, you know, it, like I tell people, it's noble to save one or two moose when you're talking about this situation, but for a population of moose, that's what we're trying to work with across 16,000 square miles of commercial forest lands. And so to put something on a moose, so to speak, when you really start to think about it, is an incredibly challenging task. Do you treat the moose or do you treat the forest? And both of those are very complicated.
Debbie, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Tom, who's calling from Rochester, New Hampshire. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi. I've migrated north from Rochester, New Hampshire now. My question for the biologist would be, what sort of appetite does a moose have for Eurasian milfoil?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know about Eurasian milfoil in particular. I know there's some other native, another native milfoil. Somebody might be able to correct me that moose might go after, but they definitely have their favorites when they're in semi-aquatic vegetation. But as far as specifically Eurasian milfoil, I'm not sure because most of our moose are far, far north, and I'm not sure how far Eurasian milfoil has got. But it'd be great if they loved it and ate it, and we could help out that situation there.
All right. Well, Tom, thanks for your question. Let's see. We'll go here to a Facebook comment from Mark. If the winter tick is threatening the moose, why did the state increase the number of moose in the lottery? People depend on the tourism of the moose, and they are just coming back.
Well, again, we talked about this is counterintuitive, is that we're trying to figure out ways to break the winter tick cycle, and that means lower densities of moose. That hunting could actually be positive and help with by to reduce those densities. But as I mentioned before, the level of hunting that we have today in Maine does not contribute to the overall decrease or increase of moose over time. So, again, looking at trying to put together an experimental unit where we would actually increase permits and try to actually reduce moose in the area in order to save moose from the winter tick.
All right. We only have a couple minutes left, and I want to ask you for your advice for people who are listening to this and saying, you know what, I've lived in Maine all my life. I've never seen a moose or maybe only once or twice.
I've never heard that question. No.
You are kidding. You are pulling my leg. I know people
okay, where
who
do you
have
wanna,
said that.
How do you want to see a moose? So this is my feeling about seeing moose, is that people need to treat moose viewing like they do bird watching. And I'm not trying to be mean about saying this, but the person who wants to go see a boreal chickadee isn't going to drive fast up the highway and zoom around the Moosehead region and be like, I didn't see one. They're going to think specifically about what is that chickadee doing today, what kind of habitat's in it, and they're going to get out their binoculars and they're going to work for it. And, you know, look, I have four guys who work for me in the summertime whose job it is to sneak in on cow moose to see if they have calves with them. And where are moose in the summertime? Yeah, they spend some time in the water, that's for sure. And if you're lucky enough and you're on the right pond at the right time of day, you'll see a moose. But other times, they're in the woods. In the woods of Maine, we've had moose that are in the woods in very, very thick canopies that even with a tracking collar, we can't see that moose or find that moose. That's how challenging it is. And so I think the perspective is here is that, you know, we need to really, you know, do some homework on how we're going to see moose. You could travel up Route 201, one of my favorite places on the way to Jackman, beautiful, beautiful part of this state. And you could drive down the road and 10 miles behind you where you just came from, a moose could pop out across the road. So what are moose doing this time of year? When's the best time to see them? You know, it takes a little bit of homework and some patience. And even though they're a big animal, sometimes you're just seeing a glimpse of that animal, and so there can be some challenges there as well.
Dawn or dusk, better than the middle of the day?
Absolutely. I mean, first thing in the morning at first light, getting out there, which is tough in the summertime when most of the people are around. That comes very early, and that's a great time to be out looking for moose. Absolutely. That doesn't mean you don't see them in the middle of the day, but you know, that's your best bang for your buck or bull.
Lee, I'm so sorry this show is over because we have so many more questions, so we're going to invite you back to Maine Calling. That's Lee Cantor, Maine's state moose biologist with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Today's show is part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics that reflect what is iconic in Maine. Sandra Harris ran the board. Ella Boyd took your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.